Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Well, hello, I'm Janet Marana, Executive Director of Priests for Life. Welcome to Just Ask Janet. And of course, you might be wondering, where's Father Pavone? Because my show now is being shown in his time slot. Well, he'll be back soon, a few more weeks. As you know, May 11th, Father had open heart surgery, and he is recuperating. He's doing fantastic as far as his progress. The doctors are very pleased. So in a few more weeks, Father will be back, and my program will switch back to being before Father's program. So I'm the little placeholder for Father Pavone. Well, joining me today is a real dear friend of mine, Father Pavone's, and this lady has been in so many different things. First of all, currently, she's a commissioner with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. She has worked with Senator Rick Santorum on Patriot Voices. And of course, when we talk about Senator Rick Santorum, I'm going to ask her to give us a little update on his daughter, Bella, who just turned 13 last month. I mean, there's so much for us to talk about, so let's get started. I want to welcome to the program Nadine Manza. Nadine, welcome to the program.
Now, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. So your big title, of course, is, you know, commissioner with the International Religious Freedom Commission. How does that commission get formed? Is it a political thing? Like, does it depend on who's in the White House? I mean, you're on it and you're a Republican and we have Biden in the White House. So tell us a little bit about the commission.
Well, thank you. So the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or USIRF, was created in 1998 with the Religious Freedom Act of 1998 by Congress. And so USIRF was created at the same time as the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom. So what USIRF is we are basically a independent bipartisan government agency with a mandate to assess religious freedom conditions abroad and make independent recommendations to the president, secretary of state, and to Congress. So we're overseen by 9 commissioners appointed by both the president and the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House and the Senate. So I was appointed by President Trump. I was reappointed last May. And so I'm actually finishing up my second term and we're limited to 2 terms. And so we're able to come together with a professional staff of about 20. And what we do is we make recommendations for countries of particular concern or special watch list countries that violate religious freedom to the State Department. We also have congressional hearings. I'm actually just found out I'm moderating a congressional hearing with the Senate Human Rights Council or caucus next week. So we're involved in a lot of different ways with Congress. We make recommendations to the President, Secretary of State, Congress. So it gives us the U.S. government an opportunity to hear about religious freedom directly, and we stay very specifically in the religious freedom lane, and helps really to give a voice for those that are suffering religious persecution around the world.
So, for example, China. Let me just take China for example.
Perfect.
Recently, I had Reggie Littlejohn on my program, who was talking about, along with Congressman Chris Smith, they had a hearing, and they're bringing to light the genocide problem in China, but also the lack of religious freedom, as we know, over in China. Christians, Catholics, Muslims, they're all being persecuted. So does the commission kind of keep an eye on what's going on in China? And then what can you do about it?
Or what's right. So we really have 26 countries that we make recommendations about right now that are that violate religious freedom to the highest levels. In China, of course, we recommend for a country of particular concern. And so China is a perfect example. It's a country that the U.S. Commission, we call ourselves USIRF, has been harping about since the very beginning of the commission. It was on the front page of our first report, on the cover of our first report. And, you know, we have been making recommendations for years about the close relationship the U.S. government had and how the trade, you know, we were recommending that religious freedom, human rights, be included in any trade negotiations. Of course, they weren't for many years. And so we have been harping about China for a long time. And it's wonderful that now the U.S. government has seen the situation that we're in and how China is a oppressor of all human rights. But religious freedom in particular is afraid of all people that practice our faith. And of course, we're seeing a genocidal campaign against Uyghurs in particular. where we have forced labor, we have them in concentration camps, and just horrible atrocities against the Uyghur community. We're seeing a movement towards in the Tibetan areas. And of course, Christians are 5% of China is Christians. And we're seeing a growth in the persecution of Christians. They're harassing, detaining, imprisoning Catholic priests at higher rates than we've seen in a very long time. So it's very disturbing how the religious freedom conditions are continuing to deteriorate in China.
So we know how bad it is. The commission points, you know, to it, you know, really opening up a big thing. This is what's going on. So what is Congress or the president, what can we do at this point to say, you know what, China, you're doing all these terrible things for human rights, genocide, and religious freedom. So we're going to do fill in the blank. Like what people right. must want to know, like what's the answer here? What's the recourse right. we have?
So the U.S. government has a lot of wonderful tools at their disposal that they can incentivize behaviors. One of them is targeted sanctions and visa restrictions on the government officials that are actually committing these atrocities, that are overseeing these atrocities. You know, a lot of them have their children going to schools in the West and they want to travel abroad. And so oftentimes when the U.S. will do global Magnitsky sanctions to penalize these individuals, a lot of other countries will follow suit as well. And you'll have a situation where they're incapable of traveling, incapable of investing abroad, their children can't go to Western schools. So there should be a consequence for these leaders making the kind of decisions they're making. The U.S. can be using those tools more. The International Olympics that are upcoming in 2022 are currently slated to be in China. They should not. The international community should not be rewarding China with hosting the Olympics, with the fact that they are committing genocide against an entire population of their country. So there are things U.S. could do to incentivize them to change their behavior, but there it's a complicated situation. It really takes a multifaceted approach for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think there's any hope of the Biden administration getting involved and saying we should move the Olympic Games out of China, or we should have, like you're saying, some mm-hmm. sanctions against China? Is there any hope on the horizon that might happen? Do you think
there is? The Biden administration has, you know, they haven't used the term religious freedom as often as we'd seen in the last administration, but we have seen some really strong movement on religious freedom issues from the administration. In their, you know, they're prefacing it more is human rights, but we've seen them with China. We've seen sanctions in Burma. We've seen them scolding Turkey for the human rights and religious freedom violations they've had. So we have seen the administration making some changes and putting sanctions. And I know that they are currently looking at the situation with the Olympics. And we know a lot of bipartisan delegation in Congress that wants the administration to push against the Olympics being there. So I'm hopeful. And I think it's important that individuals in Congress continue to put pressure on the administration.
So wouldn't it be good, I guess, for people who are watching the show right now, it wouldn't be bad for them to contact their right. congressmen, their senators, and say, you know, we heard the Olympics is supposed to be in China, but at the same time, we know they're guilty of human rights violations, religious freedom violations, genocide. We would like you to put pressure to bear to move the Olympics. So like if people start calling their mm-hmm. representatives, even in their district office, yeah. right? And I kind of know by doing, like you know too, for every phone call they receive, they say, oh, there must be another 100 people in my district feel the same way, correct? So I think this is a call out now to say to people, get on the phone and tell your congressman or senator that we don't want to see the Olympic Games in China. Please act as quickly and do what you can. Would you say?
Absolutely. Congress is very concerned about that, but you're right. They the problem with Congress is the loudest, you know, issue gets their attention, and they're always drinking water from a fire hose. There's a lot of things in front of them. They have to make choices on what's going to be their priority. So oftentimes when they hear from their own constituency is when they make that decision on what they're going to prioritize. So if you call your own senator, your own congressperson, that's going to make them more likely to move this up the list of things that they're going to speak out about.
Right. And this has to be done pretty swiftly because the right. Olympics are going to be here in a blink.
Right.
And I'm sure China is getting already. People may not realize, but when you're granted this wonderful gift, you start building extra stadiums and things for the skiers and doing all this stuff. But also, too, when they were awarded this, I think it was all the way back in 2015, there was a second place, like a runner-up city. So they really could just flip it to the runner-up city if they want very easily, or give it to the U.S. in Salt Lake City, because we've had the Winter Olympics there already. We've got the stuff is in place. So it could be done. It's not like an impossible thing. So that's just one little – I always like to, Nadine, to give people a little to-do item. So there's a little
action. This is a good one. Absolutely. I love this.
Then recently, though, I know you traveled to the Middle East because you were supposed to be on my show, and you were you were texting from the plane going to, I think, Iraq or Syria. Tell us about that trip.
To both. So I've had the opportunity to spend a decent amount in Iraq and Syria in the last couple of years, in particular the last year. And as we know, in 2014, the Christian Yazidis and other religious minorities were victims of genocide by ISIS. And the international community paid a lot of attention. You know, we all prayed for them. We stood with them. But, you know, almost 7 years later, there's been little recovery. Only half the Christians have returned to the Nineveh Plains. And in Syria, what we've seen that is really exciting for the U.S. Commission, which is on International Religious Freedom, or USERF, where I first heard about this. Northeast Syria is this government called the Autonomous Administration of Northeast Syria. And so they have produced a government in these conditions that are among the best for religious freedom in the entire Middle East. And so we all know them better by the Syrian Democratic Forces, their military arm, and they were really the boots on the ground that defeated ISIS in Syria. And they've been our partners, U.S. partners in the coalition to defeat Daesh. But what most people don't know is what they did is, as they were defeating the ISIS, is going through communities, they were setting up self-governance at the same time. And this self-governance has, you know, half the leaders are women. And it includes everyone of ethnicity and every religion in this self-governance. So what has happened is they've created this culture of tolerance where everyone of every religion or gender or faith, ethnicity, they all have a seat at the table. And so you have this multi-ethnic, multi-religious government that protects religious freedom. And so and now they have a third of Syria. And as if you remember, in October 2019, Turkey invaded pushed 200,000 people from their homes, and has been bringing in Syrians from other parts of the country, and which is Genocide Watch says is crimes against humanity, these forced population transfers. But also we've seen crimes specifically against Yazidis, Christians, Kurds, and even the United Nations is Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch have all done reports about the killings, rapes, kidnapping, forced conversions, you know, horrific conditions against religious minorities. And most of the world is just unaware that this is happening, that Turkey has continued to come in into this area that has these really wonderful religious freedom conditions and take religious freedom away from people. So we at the commission have stood, made some recommendations that the U.S. government should give this government, the Autonomous Administration of Northeast Syria, political recognition as a local government in Syria, in a future Syria. So, and lift sanctions on just this part of Syria, because as you may know, sanctions are over the entire country of Syria, and it's really creating an environment economically that is horrific for the civilians, where We often at the U.S. Commission recommend sanctions, as I did earlier for China, on either countries, complete countries, or on individuals. And this is a perfect opportunity to reward a government for good religious freedom conditions. So I've been doing a lot of work on particularly understanding how they built this government, why it has the kind of conditions it does, what are the conditions like for Christians and Yazidis there, and what the U.S. and the international community can do to support them. And to me, what's really exciting about this is you know, the one thing I feel like, you know, both sides of the aisle right now, Republicans, Democrats, we all agree that we're tired of these forever wars, and that we want to get out of forever wars. But the key to stopping a forever war is governance that holds the ground we won, so we don't have to come back and fight for it again. So the Autonomous Administration of Northeast Syria and Northeast Syria is holding the ground we won in the fight against ISIS, so we don't have to come back again. And so it's a lot easier for us to support this governance and let them continue to grow their economy so they can take care of and be this refuge for religious minorities. Where when you look at Iraq, what has happened is we didn't hold the ground we won against ISIS. So what happened is these Iranian militias came in, set up shop, took over the ground, and they control the areas where religious minorities live and have made it an impossible place for people to be able to practice their faith and live safely. And so, you know, if we pull back in Northeast Syria, it's going to become similar or worse. And so, you know, we have an opportunity here to stand up for religious minorities. And so I've been working very hard to understand, like I said, the conditions, to be a truth teller and to be able to come back and brief the administration, members of Congress, about things we can do in both Iraq and Syria to support religious minorities. So it's been one of my passions in the last couple of years that I do have, even in Iraq, I think there's some hope for Christians there. But they're going to need us to come alongside them and support some of these policies.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, my first trip, my first and only trip so far, I hope I go back to the Holy Land.
Oh, yes.
Was all the way back, it's over a decade ago. And I remember the thing that made me the saddest was when I went to Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. And how we were on a tour bus. And we went inside, and there's the literally wall, all, you know, high wall with barbed wire at the top, all around the city of Bethlehem, the birthplace of Christ. And the Israeli soldiers came on our bus, looked up and down, and we didn't have suitcases, of course, but he had to open up the things, make sure nothing was under the bus, and then we got to come in. And our guide explained to us that he actually took us to a beautiful olive store, gift store, that was one run just by the Christians. And he said, oh, we make sure when we bring the tourists through here that you shop only in the Christian stores because the Christians over there are being persecuted. And he said, they can't even leave. They can't freely leave Bethlehem. Do you know a little bit more about that situation? And I guess it's still going on today. And is there any hope of that changing? Because I was just, it blew my mind to think that people are just stuck. Like they explained to me one time, someone had a relative that died in another country. They couldn't leave to go to the funeral. And I was like, right. I can't believe this. In Bethlehem, the birthplace of Christ, there's this turmoil. Can you tell everyone a little bit about that?
Sure. So first of all, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom doesn't get involved in the conflict at this point in time in Israel with Palestine. So you know, we don't have any recommendations from that side, but from my own personal experience, you know, we in dealing with friends that are working in this, it's highly complicated. But yes, there are lots of Palestinian Christians that are persecuted and also don't have freedom of movement to leave. They as well as their Muslim neighbors, you know, are stuck either in Gaza or in the other areas. And we definitely need to pray for them. And really there's a lot of good groups that are doing either advocacy or education on them. I know In Defense of Christians does a lot of advocacy for all Christians in the Middle East, including the Palestinian Christians. So they're always a really good source to go to learn more about ways you can support Christians in Palestine. You know, I know Joel Rosenberg, who now lives in Israel. You know, he has a ministry that also does a lot of work with the Christians in the Palestinian areas, as well as the Christians in the Israeli areas. So it does get more complicated when you start looking at how the minorities and how Christians are impacted by war and by these conflicts. And it is a difficult path for them.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, I don't know, maybe it's the closest I've ever gotten also to like a war kind of look. And I remember there was another point, we went to the border of Syria. Yes. And here we are. Mm-hmm. And you see all these signs, it's all this barbed wire. And it says, do not enter this field, landmines. And you look down and over, and it's the UN, it's the demarcation zone or something. And behind you is this big fortress of Israel, and they have their guns trained this way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, I've never seen that before. And I said to myself, the people over here live, and you know, whether it's Israel or Iraq or Syria, they live this life every day of the week, and they get up, and this is the conflict. And it's all about, at the base of it all, it's religion, isn't it? It's the fight about all these different religions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of it. You know,
it's definitely part of it. And no doubt that the religious minorities suffer the most in war. They usually are at the bottom of the pecking order when it comes to status. So you look at Syria, for instance. I know there's a lot of fatigue about the Middle East, but, you know, there still is a way that we can be supportive of those who, but by the grace of God, it could be us and our families. You know, 12 million Syrians are displaced. 6 million are internally displaced. Another 6 million are pushed outside of Syria. And a lot of them are in IDP camps still in Lebanon. They've been there for years, living in tents, not able to go back home. And the Christians there are in religious minorities, others, Yazidis, have suffered certainly among the most, having the least amount of rights, the least ability to work and provide for their families and dependent completely on others. And some of them have not been able to relocate. I mean, obviously, a lot of Christians were located. A lot of countries have been open to Christians. But I was, been very concerned about the Christians in the Nineveh Plains and the ones that haven't been able to return. And so I went to Jordan last summer and was meeting with some Christians that haven't been able to return to Iraq, but also haven't been able to be relocated in another country. And I met this beautiful family from Mosul. The mother used to be a hairdresser there and have her own salon. Her husband was a school teacher. And she was attacked by ISIS, stabbed in a marketplace in a targeted attack because of her beauty salon, really focused on Christian women. And so they had to flee to the Kurdistan Regional Government Area in northern Iraq, where they were in a refugee camp for a while, for several months. But her children, three of them developed an eye disease because of the high heat. They were in these metal containers that a lot of people live in these IDP camps, and the heat was so high in it that their nerves had degenerated in their eyes, and so they had to leave. So they went to Amman. A ministry there helped their children get surgery. They're all wearing glasses, but they all can see again. And she's there, I think, with four or five children, and told me the story about how her oldest daughter had just given birth and was taking a shower at their home, and ISIS had smoke bombed their house. And because she was in a small area, she ended up dying. And so they're also raising their granddaughter, her child. And so they've been turned down by seven countries to relocate. She has no idea why. She decided the only way for them to have a normal life is to go back to Mosul. They went back to see their house to see if they could fix it up. That was still partially destroyed a couple years ago. And they got a call on her cell phone saying, if you come back, more of your family is going to die. So then they went back to Amman. They don't get any money from the UN. They get no money from the government. It's only been NGOs in Amman that take care of Christian families that provide their food. And she just cried. They're not allowed to work. The government won't let them work. Iraqi refugees are not allowed to work in Jordan. So you have these people that literally have done no fault, nothing. They've just been persecuted and they can't see a path forward for themselves. And it's heartbreaking. And so there are things that we can do to support these communities for them. First of all, if they want to come back, to be able to come back. And I've been working hard about that. And to me, that's why Northeast Syria matters. It's a place that is safe for religious minorities to be. It's a hard economically for them right now, there as it is in a lot of other places in the Middle East. But if we can give people the option to come back to where they their home is, or to be resettled someplace safely, they should have the opportunity for a future.
So if people just want to follow what's going on, do you have a website they can go to?
Sure. I have a couple. Sure. So for the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which is a little different, but it's so important. You can go to userf.gov, and we have a wonderful website that goes through the countries. You can look up the different countries I'm talking about. And we have a 2-page report that explains the issues in these countries and then recommendations we have for a way forward. And they're it's about the best information you're going to get on religious freedom.
All right, Nadine, let's spell out those letters so that people can hear it.
So it's USCIRF.
Okay, USCIRF.gov.
Right.
Perfect. And that's how you can follow what's going on.
That's one way. And then I work with Patriot Voices and also patriotvoices.com. We have some advocacy. You can learn more about Northeast Syria and also about some of the religious freedom conditions. We have some information on our website as well.
That's great. We only have a couple minutes left, but I know last month, Rick Santorum's daughter Bella turned 13. our wonderful little trisomy 18 little girl that at birth they thought was not going to live much more than a few hours or a few days. She's now turned miracle. You have a little picture to hold up of Bella there?
I do. So this was her birthday card. She just turned 13. You know, the dignity of all life, whether it's people, you know, that are born with a disability or that are born in an unexpected situation or that are just trying to practice their faith in another country, you know, we could sign up for all of them at the same time. Some people think you have to choose. Like if you're working on international religious freedom, then that means it takes away from domestic policy. But it really doesn't, because we have these government institutions that are made to do all these different things, and we could be pushing all of them to move in the right direction. And so she's an example of the miracle of life and the dignity of all life, and is a joy. She's doing great, just turned 13. And as you can see, looks beautiful and is just cherished by her family and brings a lot of joy everywhere she goes.
Yeah. And of course, any update on Senator Santorum? Does he have any plans that we need to know about or?
You know, he continues to stay very busy. So at Patriot Voices, we work together on particularly working family policy, paid family leave issues, the way government can support family in a conservative way to help families get the best possible start in life. So we work together. He's doing a lot behind the scenes still when it comes to policy, and is still an important voice. And you can learn more about some of his recent activities at patriotvoices.com. But he's doing really well and still has his fingerprint on a lot of important things happening in this country.
Wow. Well, Nadine, we learned a lot in the short amount of time, and I'm sure I'm going to have you back again because there's a lot. This is an ever-changing topic. Yeah. Always more to learn, more to do, but we did get everyone an action item. Call your congresspeople and senators about the Olympics. Tell them you want it out of China. That's a nice, simple action item for the program. So thank you for joining us. Okay,
thanks.
Nadine?
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, brothers and sisters, thank you for joining us on Just Ask Janet. But before we go, I'm going to hold up something else that has to do with freedom. And here at Priest for Life, we have our beautiful T-shirt celebrating for July 4th, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness for All Humans, Born and Unborn. You can go to our website, prolifeproducts.org, to order your T-shirt today. And we have it in small, medium, large, extra large, and double X. Again, go to prolifeproducts.org. Thank you for joining us on Just Ask Janet. And remember, there are some abortions only you can stop and some lives only you can save. Join us again next time. Thank you and God bless.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.